It's the Naked Scientists with Chris, Richard and Dave this week. We're taking all your calls on anything science. You can email chris@thenakedscientists.com. Now, the Ig Nobel Prizes honour achievements, it says, that make people first laugh and then think. And the prizes are intended to celebrate the unusual, honour the imaginative and also to spur people's interest in science, medicine and technology. And as one major journalist put it, they come with little cash, but much cachet. And the guy who sorted it all out and started it going is Mark Abrams. And he's with us. So, Mark, why did you start this?
Let me correct something first. That business about they come with little cash. They come with no cash.
Okay, fair enough. But why did you get it going? What was the idea behind this?
I had become the editor of a science journal, and I discovered that when you edit a science journal, and I'm sure Mark found the same thing, suddenly all kinds of people get in touch with you, and they want to tell you about the wonderful things they've done. And some of those things are wonderful, some aren't. But you know that most of these people, no matter what they do, will never, ever, ever get any recognition from anybody. Now, I kept running into people who'd done things that were funny and interesting science, and it seemed a shame that nobody would ever know about it. And so that, more or less, is why we started the Ig Nobels.
The point about the Naked Scientists is when we try and have fun with science, because at the end of the day, if people are impressed or, as well as amused, they tend to remember, I think, and they'll also listen harder, I think, for longer. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I don't think that there's too much reason to try to bore people. I've never heard an argument in favor of that.
Let's take a look at some of the things that you've actually got on your tour and past prizes. I love the one about country music.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some shows in London, a couple of shows in London this week, and then in Newcastle on Friday night. There is a professor, Jim Gundlach, from Alabama, who, with a colleague, did a study about the effects of country music on suicide.
Mm-hmm. And?
He found that there may be some effects of country music on suicide.
Does it prevent or does it encourage suicide?
Well, the numbers are about 10 years old, so as to what will happen right now, which I think is what you're really getting at, no one can say. But what he found was that in cities that played a lot of country music on the radio, the suicide rates were a little bit higher.
Well, by all accounts, I mean, there is a very popular country show on this radio station, and it certainly does very well, and it's thriving, gets lots of calls, so the audience is certainly not dead. So
nobody's,
who's killing themselves?
Nobody's tried to sue you yet.
Well, not me personally, but is it the people who are actually listening to the show who then are writing themselves out a death wish, or is it people who incidentally bump into some country music and aren't kind of habituated or prepared for
it? Yeah, if there's an effect, it's on people listening to music. It's not on people who don't listen to music.
Fair enough. Now, what about, because there was an interesting thing coming up in our question of the week this week, which is all about if you cut hair, does it grow more? Because there's this idea that if you cut hair, and often my wife says that she worries about sort of shaving her legs or something in case it makes them more hairy, and we're going to be looking at that in a second. But aren't people worried about pubic lice and things like that?
Of course people are worried about pubic lice. As soon as you mention it, people get worried. One of the people on the tour is Kees Mulliker, who's from the Netherlands. He's the guy who won an Ig Nobel Prize a few years ago. He's an ornithologist. He won his prize because he documented the first known case of homosexual necrophilia in the mallard duck. But that's not why he's here this year. This year he's going to talk about a study done at Leeds by two doctors who said that in the past 10 years, the incidence of pubic lice in Britain have just fallen to almost zero. And the
question is why?
And they have a theory. Their theory is that this is exactly the same time period when we saw a rise in popularity of that hairstyle known as the Brazilian.
Right, so it's just the absence of a suitable environment.
Yes, that's well put.
So, I mean, you can see the correlate of that in nature all the time, can't you? If you cut the trees down, don't need bears.
Yeah. Now, this has yet to be proven, and Case is touring Britain partly because he's the curator of a natural history museum. Here we have a report of an imminently endangered species, and he's asking that anybody who has a living sample of pubic lice, please come to the shows, and he would love to collect it and take it to his museum.
The problem is, how are you going to conserve them? Because they only really like living on us.
One step at a time here.
Okay, so you're going to get the
specimens.
Samples.
Then you
look for suitable hosts.
While they're still alive. Could be urgent.
One person we had on the program, must have been about a year or so ago, was Claire Rind, and she's a researcher at Newcastle. And she came to you guys' attention with the Ig Nobel Prizes because she showed locusts Star Wars and monitored their brain activity.
This is true. She and her colleague Peter Simmons, they monitored the activity of one brain cell in a locust while they had that locust strapped down and watching selected scenes from Star Wars. The scenes they were watching were in the original Star Wars movie, if you remember, the fighters dive into the trough inside the Death Star. And what they were wondering about was locusts typically are in swarms of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, but they seem not to collide very often. So they were wondering, what's going on inside the brain of a locust that helps prevent these collisions?
They did actually get quite a lot of interesting answers out, didn't they? Because, and what they're now saying is that they could apply the neurological version of that to a robot to make more effective flying machine.
I believe they also got some funding from one of the large automobile manufacturers, too, who also are interested in preventing collisions,
which
although they don't care that much about
come
locusts.
Come in handy on the roads in the UK, which are hopelessly overcrowded.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Abrahams, thank you very much. Just tell us, so that people can come along if they want to, where are the next set of shows and how do they find out more if they want to come along and see one of your shows?
Yeah, you can look at the schedule on www.improbable.com. The shows are Tuesday night at Imperial College, Wednesday night at the Guardian's little museum on Farringdon Street, Farringdon Road in London, and then Friday night in the Life Centre in Newcastle.
And they'll basically get yourself and some of these people we've been talking about.
Oh, a whole bunch of Nobel Prize winners. And these are all free events, too.
And if someone wants to nominate someone.
Oh, please do. We're always collecting nominations. That's one of the best parts of the tour is people come up afterwards and tell us about things they've discovered or people they know who've done things that need recognition.
Mark, thank you very much. That's Mark Abrahams. He's the guy who founded the Ig Nobel Prizes, and he's actually deigned to come from Cambridge, Massachusetts, here to the proper Cambridge in the UK to tell us all about it. It's part of his tour around the UK with his Ig Nobel Prize tour, which he does, I think, every year.